Sandin, and you're listening to Thinking Outside the Long Box.
Hi, I'm Christos Gade.
Hey, this is writer Fred Van Lente.
Hi, this is Ruth Fletcher Gade.
I'm Barry Gregory.
Hi, this is Derek Donovan.
And this is Victor Dandridge.
Issues and wrap them up tight and make a list so my collections come.
Hi, I'm Cynthia Rothrock, and you're listening to Thinking Outside the Long Box.
Way too excited.
Hey, this is Kevin Sorbo here, and you are listening to Thinking Outside the Long Box. And really, do some thinking, seriously.
To the place where wild nerds roam with pretty girls.
Hey, everybody, and welcome to Thinking Outside the Long Box. My name is Thomas Strange, and I am coming to you from the same city as my good friend Joshua and LT, the beautiful city of Boston. How's everybody doing tonight? LT, how's it going?
It's going okay. How are you doing, Tom?
Doing great. How about you, Josh?
I'm doing well. Our geographical difference has shrunk considerably.
Seeing as I can smell your breath from here, yes, it's considerable. And on the desert moon, that is the Death Star, that is Louisiana, our good friend Mike Manning. How you doing, Mike?
I'm doing fabulous tonight, guys.
I was so hoping you weren't going to unmute your mic so I can make fun of you. It would have been hilarious. And also scary. Speaking of scary, tonight's episode is all about horror comic books. Some of our favorite comic book characters, and we'll also talk, when I'm talking about historical stuff, I'm going to talk about why horror comic books were very popular during the EC time. But first, we're going to talk about some of our favorite horror comic characters, and to start that off, we're going to go with my good friend Josh. What's your favorite horror comic?
This is pretty recent. I think they kicked off around 2014, but Manifest Destiny. If you have not seen this title, this is a fantastic book. It is a new twist on Jefferson sending Lewis and Clark west. So in 1803 in St. Louis, Lewis and Clark head on their expedition west, sent there by the President of the United States to find the easiest and best traveled path to the Pacific. And they had their submission was, of course, to do scientific research along the way. But in Manifest Destiny, the U.S. government and Lewis and Clark both know about the horrors and atrocities that lurk in the U.S. West.
So, like Native American kind of monsters and stuff, or are we talking Wendigos? What are we talking about?
So, yeah, there's a very, very interesting sort of glom of sort of Greek mythos and Native American mythos. So, like, the first thing they sort of bump into are centaurs, except they're bison instead of horses. And there's a horrible, horrible sort of moss lichen that turns people into plant zombies. The whole book is extraordinarily well written. It's a very great cast. There's a lot of despair and sort of just wilderness survival mixed in with horror and magic. It's just fantastic. I love the art. It's a great theme book.
All right, that's one that you've actually recommended to me personally before, so I'm going to make sure I do pick that one up. And remember, if you're playing the drinking game at home, Josh just said lichen, which, you know, every time you do that, you have to do, you know, like five shots or something.
Yeah, lichen.
Don't do that. We're going to kill people. LT, what are you going to talk about today there, buddy?
I would like to talk about Tales of the Zombies. This was a Marvel Comics publication in the mid-70s, and they actually did it in magazine format so that they could get around the comics code. Since it was in a slightly different format than the comics, they were able to get around the comics code. And it only ran for about 10 or 11 issues, and each one was kind of short stories, kind of separate from all the others, not really connected. And the artwork was fantastic. It had a lot of good writers on it, too. Some people that we've all liked. Tony Isabella did some writing. Chris Claremont of the X-Men did some writing. So it was a really interesting little series. I picked it up on the Marvel Essentials reprint, and that's what I was hoping to talk about.
That's another one that people have told me in the past that I would like to read, so I'm going to have to pick that one up too.
I can loan you my copy, tell me.
Well, thank you very much. I'm going to talk about one of my favorite horror teams of all time, and that was the Night Shift. And you want to talk about a crazy, motley crew. made up of the Brothers Grimm, two guys who could pull novelty weapons out of their costumes, Dance Macabre, who could hypnotize people with their dance, Digger, one of my favorites, I'm going to talk about him a little bit more in a second, Gypsy Moth, who had telekinesis, but she can only use it against cloth. All right, how weird is that? TikTok, great power. He can see exactly 1 minute into the future. All right? He's seen himself getting knocked out so many times. It was like a running gag in the comic book. It was terrific. Werewolf by Night, which, of course, a lot of people are pretty familiar with. We talked about him during Moon Knight. Tatterdemalion. And like I wanted to talk about with Digger, the reason I find Digger so very interesting is because he was set up to be like the new Crypt Keeper. Excuse me. The new Crypt Keeper. So he'd be burying somebody for their sins, and then he'd go over why he was burying them. So that was his way of introducing himself into a story, and it was also the tying-in factor for a comic book. So he'd bury three people alive and tell them why he was doing it and go over the horror story that they lived to get them put into the hands of the Digger. The Digger was a very short-lived character, but they wanted to reuse him, so they brought him from the horror genre as a supervillain and later as kind of a superhero in the Night Shift. Did I go on too much about that because I love the Digger so much?
No, that's fine. I think you should have brought up the Night Shift when we were talking about the lamest supervillains.
Hey, that's true. Night Shift were cool. I didn't even mention the Needle, who had a giant knitting needle that he would stab people with. And he could also hypnotize people if they looked in one of his eyes. They looked in
both of his
eyes.
We're going to have to do another episode of horrible supervillains.
Oh, we definitely want to do one more because I got a bunch that I could talk about. And look, these aren't going to make it.
Look, you told me last week that you were going to talk about the Night Shift. And I had to look them up. And you know what? I own almost every issue of every comic they were in, but they're just so horrible, I completely forgot about them.
Can I have them?
No.
I've just been on eBay, like, putting them in my cart. I got like $70 worth of Night Shift stuff in my cart.
I'm missing one issue of the original Captain America run, and you want me to give you up those three precious issues that Night Shift appear in?
Yeah. That's exactly what I'm talking about here. But since we're talking so eloquently, Michael, what is your favorite horror comic book?
My favorite horror comic book is Lock and Key.
That's a great
by Joe Hill, who is also, in addition to writing comics, is a novelist. He wrote a really great horror novel called The Heart-Shaped Box. But Lock and Key was so great. I got introduced to it in San Diego Comic-Con, and that next, I picked up the first four graphic novels of it, and I was so impressed that I sent a bunch of my friends copies of Lock and Key, which I know some of you guys got, and it was the first comic book that I was like, wow, I can't read this right before I go to sleep. This is too creepy for me.
It was one of the only comic books that I stopped reading for a while.
Yeah, Mike, when you sent me that Lock and Key book, I was really impressed. I hadn't been reading horror comics at all. And really, that's what led me to find Manifest Destiny. I started reading Eight Ghosts. There were a couple other books I started to dabble in right away. I really enjoyed it. And, I mean, Lock and Key with the Cthulhu-esque, you know, the dark New England shoreline. You know, there's a little bit of a... just every town we grew up in those books, and I feel it when I read it.
Yeah. It reminds me of Southwick, Massachusetts. Actually, I don't know if anyone's been out there, but it's kind of gritty and dark and blue collar, and just kind of it reminded me of Southwick.
And I think Ken Clark is going to inherit the Key House.
That's in Munson, and that was a creepy house. That's still a creepy house.
No, not that. I'm talking about Rachel's family's house right out on the coast. It's the perfect fit for the Key House.
I forgot one of us did marry into money.
It's true.
It wasn't me.
I also like Lock and Key a lot. I really liked the idea when they got the key to open up their heads and put books and such in them. I thought that was a really inventive and creative idea in Lock and Key. And also the whole, you know, spirit living in the well that's trying to get out, I thought was fantastic.
That was creepy. Creepy, creepy, creepy.
Very, very creepy.
All right, so that's it pretty much for our horror comic books. I think we've all gotten our fill, and we can turn the lights back on. Mikey, what do you got in the front of the long box?
In the front of the long box today, I've got The Legend of Wonder Woman. So it is a retelling of the origins of Wonder Woman, and it is phenomenal, mainly because they've reintroduced Etta Candy into the mythos.
And
she is fabulous. It is just a fun book. All ages could read it. It's not going to be bad for kids to read it, but adults can read it too. I know I've been enjoying the heck out of it, and I've also talked to one of my friends, Todd Sinclair, who is one of our listeners. Todd likes Legends of Wonder Woman, and so does his 13-year-old daughter.
Oh, great. I mean, the character Etta Candy, if you read the autobiography of Marsden, you can actually see some of the influences, some of the historical women he's bumped into, and some of the women that he hung out that went to Emerson College back, you know, when his wife was there in a sorority. And you can kind of get a feel of how Etta Candy kind of came about. Tommy, what do you got in the back of the long box?
I've got The Spectre. The Spectre was originally created in the 40s, and he's a DC character. The run that I liked was back in 1992, John Ostrander kind of revived the series. And in Spectre number one of that, it had a fantastic cover with the Spectre in the forefront, and in the background was a huge skull made out of skulls and skeletons, and it glow in the dark. And that was my first introduction to the Spectre, and I really liked the character. He was very pulpy. He's the embodiment of God's vengeance on Earth, and he's a spirit tied to the soul of Jim Corrigan, a cop who was killed and put into a barrel of cement and thrown in the river to just be hide the body. And he came back with a vengeance to wreak havoc on his killers. And he just kind of stayed around and would enact vengeance upon people that were wronged. And then also some of the DC storylines, he became a very huge mythical creature, very powerful. I wasn't crazy about the whole like giant galaxy sucking vengeance that the Spectre could be, but I really liked the kind of individual stories where he would creatively kind of kill off people that had wronged other people in vengeance.
Yeah, as I recall, there was one where this guy was like a mob guy, and he was cruel to animals, so he was turned into a mouse and cats ate him. That was a pretty gruesome way to die. And the Spectre would do stuff just like that, right, Tommy?
Yeah, that's pretty much what he did on a regular basis in the DC Comics world. And it was one of the better comics that I was reading in the mid-90s.
Yeah, and those mid-90 comics by Ostrander, the covers on all those books were amazing.
I agree 100%. Yeah.
They were visually striking.
That's terrific. That brings me to my section, which is social relevance in comic books. And since we're talking about horrors, I just want to talk a little bit about when Marvel and DC and other comic books were making their money on romance comic books and horror comic books. So during the Comics Code period, superheroes fell way out of favor because there were so many restrictions about what you could and could not do in the comic books. So Marvel and DC to...
Tommy, can you go into a little bit more history of the Comics Code?
We've done that in the past too many times. Our listeners should be okay. Educated enough. Mikey, what do you think? Do I have to go in the Comics Code again?
It's kind of important to tell everybody what the Comics Code is, I think, just in case there are new listeners.
All right. Fine. So there was a time when the comics, after the publication of a book called the, what was that called? The 10-Cent Plague?
The Seduction of the Innocent.
The Seduction of the Innocent.
Seduction of the Innocent.
So after the publication of The Seduction of the Innocent and also another book called The 10-Cent Plague about how comic books were destroying our youth, there kind of came this crazy backlash. It kind of reminded me a little bit of the backlash against Dungeons and Dragons. I didn't live through the Comics Code backlash, but I did live the Dungeons and Dragons backlash. And it seemed like they were going way out of their way to find a way to blame comic books for everything, just the way they tried to blame Dungeons and Dragons for just about everything. So the comic book companies, in order to keep in production, became their own censors. They came up with the Comic Books Code. They set up a whole bunch of censors who would go through these comic books and take out anything they thought would be deemed inappropriate for children. And what it really did was kind of not only dumbed down comic books, but it also really took a lot of the punch, literally taking the punch out of some comic books altogether. A lot of the violence had to be more off the page and kind of more science fiction-y. It was a terrible time for comic books. So instead of writing these superhero comic books, Marvel and DC both went and started doing horror comic books and romance comic books. So that's where you really see the rise of horror comics. One thing I like to point out is that a few good characters did come out of the horror comics. The Werewolf by Night came out during this, and also The Crypt Keeper, which has four or five movies.
Something like that,
yeah. So some good did come out of it, and some from the romance comics, Patsy Walker, Hellcat being one of the more notable ones, did come out of this romance and horror comic book age. So even though it was a bad time for comic books, it was a creative time for comic books, and a few good things did come of it. And that brings us to our good friend Josh. Josh, why don't you go off on a tangent?
Hey, my tangent has something to do with our first giveaway.
Our first giveaway.
Thanks. Yeah, we're doing our first giveaway. So, the first one of you guys who sends an email to luckybastard@outsidethelongbox.com and tells us who your favorite podcaster is and why will be randomly selected by whoever gets the email, I guess.
Whoever is Lucky Bastard. We're not telling you who's going to be screening these.
Nobody knows who the Lucky Bastard
is. We don't want to taint.
Random.
I just like saying taint. We don't want to taint what you might be sending us.
Bastard.
Right.
Lucky.
That's right.
Is that your whole tangent?
And the winner will be selected on June 15th.
June 15th. That's a great day.
Thanks.
Yeah, you're welcome.
Yeah, no, so the tangent is, what's the best thing you guys have ever won?
Oh, that's a toughie.
I can answer that right away.
Go ahead, Mikey.
At San Diego Comic-Con a few years ago, I won the Munchkin game that was played on tabletop, but signed by Will Wheaton and Felicia Day.
Will Wheaton?
Will Wheaton.
That's right.
And was that game rigged?
No, it was not until that guy started attacking all of us, and then we all decided we don't care who wins the game as long as this douchebag doesn't win.
That was a great time, and that was a great prize. Tommy, do you have a best prize you've ever won?
I've got to say that the best prize I've ever won is my wife's heart. And then the second best was a $100 gift card to Amazon.
I think you're underplaying that gift card, buddy. I'm just saying. Josh, how about you?
I won a 3-day trip to Vegas.
Oh, what the hell? What did you win a 3-day trip to Vegas?
We actually went to the Star Trek experience. What were we out there for? We were
out there for fun.
All right.
I was out there to play craps. I don't know why you guys went.
I remember finishing a warp core breach with Mark. Man, that drink was huge.
All right, I don't know if this even counts, but the best thing I ever won, and I won it through diligence and perseverance, but was my marksman badge when I was in the military. Now, for those of you who are veterans, you know that marksman badge is the badge they give terrible, terrible shots. It is the lowest you can get, and they still let you have a gun. It goes marksman, sharpshooter, expert. And I could not qualify with my stupid freaking rifle. I had to go back like 5 times to the range. When I finally made marksman, I was a very happy camper. So I guess that was one of my proudest wins of all time. I mean, yeah, that was probably it.
And when a U.S. military service...
Was that rifle? the
shoot accurately. We all win.
Yeah, we all win.
So, Josh, what was the email again that they should email?
LuckyBastard@OutsideTheLongBox.com.
I see you contemplating that, Mike. Do you like that that much that you're thinking about it?
No, I didn't have anything else to say. That's what.
Well, you might not have anything else to say, but someone does. And that someone is our very special interview this month, Penny, well, this week, Penny Dreadful. Now, Josh, you know more about Penny than I do. Tell us a little about Penny Dreadful.
Penny is a two-time award-winning...
Two-time!
Award-winning. horror show host. She is on cable, local cable access all over New England. You can find her at shillingshockers.com. She has 9 seasons of DVDs, and she's a local celebrity in the area of live local entertainment.
And she does so a little bit like Elvira.
Yeah, she's sort of the Elvira of New England.
So it goes right into with our horror theme. And I hear she's lovely, and you've been friends with her for a while.
I've known her for a very long time, since college.
Wow, terrific, terrific. All right, so without any further ado, no more fanfare. Let's go right over to that interview with Penny Dreadful.
Hey, folks, this is Josh Opper from Thinking Outside the Long Box, and I'm here at Super Mega Fest in Marlboro, Mass, talking to 2-time award-winning horror host, Penny Dreadful. Penny, how's your con going?
It's going wonderful, Josh. Thanks for stopping by to visit.
Well, we really appreciate you taking the time to talk to us today. And since we are a comic book podcast, let's talk about your book. Now, I understood you wrote it yourself?
I did. It was published by a very small imprint called Comic Book Divas. They approached me a few years ago and asked if I wanted to do a Penny Dreadful comic. And I thought that would be fun. I've always been a fan of comics growing up. I liked both Marvel and DC and the classic horror comics, too. I had a bunch of reprints of the old EC comics. And I wanted to do something in that vein, sort of in the style of a kind of a Tales from the Crypt sort of a thing. And so the publisher, Jeffrey Hughes, said, well, you know, you can write the comic. I have an artist who's going to do the illustrate it. His artist wound up illustrating one of the stories, and I got a local artist, Frankie B. Washington, to illustrate the other stories, 2 stories, and Frankie blew me away with what he did. He did this real kind of retro style illustration, and he got his friend James Biggie to kind of age the pages to make them look like they're an old comic, so it was really fun.
That's great. That sounds like a great project. Do we expect to see any more of those?
It was meant as a one-shot, and if I do more, I'll probably kind of do it on my own, you know, a self-published kind of a thing. I have thought about it. I've written a couple more comic stories, actually, so there is a possibility of another one coming out, but no time frame on that.
Well, I'm sure the fans would like to see it. So what did you read as a kid that kind of brought you up to what you do now?
Oh, gosh. Well, as a kid, I really liked superhero comics. I read both DC and Marvel. I never really got the whole DC versus Marvel thing, which one is better, because as a kid, I didn't really see much of a distinction. A friend of mine and my uncle and a friend of mine who had comics would just give me their old comics. So I would read them, and I loved Batman, Superman, Spider-Man, The Defenders. I had a bunch of those comics. But then I also got into horror comics. My uncle was a big monster fan growing up, my Uncle Val. And he was a big fan of old horror movies, and he had a bunch of old horror comics, and he gave me those. And I started buying the reprints of the EC horror comics, Tales from the Crypt, Vault of Horror. And I don't know, I guess that sort of informed what I do in a sense, because the horror host concept actually originated in radio and comics before it moved to television. So those horror hosts, the Crypt Keeper and the like, they all sort of had those morbid puns and bad jokes and things of that nature where they would introduce the story. And a lot of what I do, I guess, comes from that vein, you know.
And that's in season 9, just got released, right?
Season 9, yeah. We just released that back in October. And it's 7 new episodes that we put out.
Excellent. Where can people see that?
They can find it on television if they live in New England. If they're The show airs in your town. We are in about 200 cities and towns throughout New England. So you can check our website, which is shillingshockers.com, and we have a TV listings on there. If you can't find it on your local channel, we do have DVDs available on our website at shillingshockers.com, and we have all 9 seasons that we've put out, plus some of the holiday specials that we've done.
That's great. So those of us here at Thinking Outside the Long Box were sort of in the infancy of our audio world and trying to get our message out. How did you get so popular coming right out of the gate to get into so many towns and so many channels?
I paid a lot of people to say they liked the show, and that's basically how it worked. We just started slow. We got on like one local cable access channel, and then another, and as the show started, it's sort of a cult thing. Like people who like the hosted horror movie format really like it. A lot of people don't even know what it is anymore. Like, it's sort of a throwback to, like, old TV, which is part of what we wanted to do, is bring back a local TV show. And people started telling their friends about it. So we'd get emails like, oh, my friend watches your show in New Bedford. Can I get it on in Fall River? Can I get it on in Brockton? Can I get it? And so we just started kind of spreading the show around that way. And it just caught on. Cable stations started contacting us. We'd start sending them episodes, and it just spread that way. And now with digital technology, a lot of the stations, even around the country, just download the show from the internet, and they play it on their channel.
Oh, that's great. Have you ever been approached by someone who would syndicate it, like, digitally, like Netflix or anything like that?
We haven't been approached by somebody from Netflix. They stay far away from us. We were approached by somebody who was doing, like, their own internet TV channel. A couple of people who've been, and we do stream on one of those channels. It's called Creepy Castle. It's called, with a K, Creepy Castle. And they're all horror host programming. It's like a internet horror host channel, and they play Shilling Shockers on rotation on that channel. There were a couple other ones that were on Underground TV and a couple other, like, internet streaming channels, so you can find it on there too.
Are we expecting season 10?
I think for now we're going to kind of take a break and see where things go. We might wind up doing another season, but I don't see that happening anytime soon. What we're probably going to wind up doing is, if we're going to do something new, it would be like a Halloween special, like an annual Halloween special. Because it's just, right now, we finished season 9, and it's just kind of hard to kind of think about doing another season.
So if you could reach back into the vault and bring one comic book to the big screen, what would you do? Who do you take?
One comic book to the big screen. Oh, man, that's a good question. That is a really difficult question to answer. I'm going to say, because they're doing most of the ones I would say. Like, I was going to say The Defenders, but they're doing a TV version, a Netflix version of The Defenders.
I can't wait for that.
Yes, I'm psyched about that. Although The Defenders I wanted to see are not the actual Defenders who are going to be in the show. The Defenders I remember were Doctor Strange, who's getting his own movie, The Incredible Hulk, Silver Surfer, and Namor, the Submariner. So I kind of want to see that. Then I was going to say Aquaman, but they're making an Aquaman movie. Whether you want it or not, it's coming. It's Jason Momoa, though, so, you know.
He does look fantastic in the armor.
He does. He really does. I wish he was blonde, though. That's my only... I wish he had blonde hair. I'm going to say... I should probably pick a horror comic. I'm going to say... They already did a Tales from the Crypt movie. They did. Marvel's Tomb of Dracula. That's what I want to see. I want to see, actually, not only Tomb of Dracula, I want to see all Tales of the Zombie, Werewolf by Night, and Monster Frankenstein, and Tomb of Dracula. Like, I want to see the big Marvel monsters, maybe even the Living Mummy, too. The Marvel Monster Universe from the 70s. That's what I want to see.
All right. Well, let's see if we can get that done for you.
Make it happen, Josh.
Make it happen. All right. Remind me again where we can find your merch and your show?
You can look up shillingshockers.com, not like Kurt Schilling, the baseball player, Schilling like the British money, S-H-I-L-L-I-N-G, and we got lots of DVDs, all kinds of crazy, wacky merchandise. You can join my fan coven, and you'll never be the same again.
Well, thanks. I really appreciate you taking the time to talk to us today.
Thank you, Josh. Best of luck with the podcast.
Thanks.
That was awesome. Penny Dreadful sounds like a delight. You've known her since college?
Yeah, very long time. Great.
You're a lucky bastard. Or are you?
Bum, bum, bum.
Bum, bum, bum.
Aren't we all lucky bastards?
Now's the time of the podcast where we usually do our plugs. Tommy, do you want to do plugs first?
I'd like to plug IANLEINO.com, IanLino.com, purveyor of fine t-shirts, glassware, and other geeky things. IanLino.com.
All right. How about you, Josh? What would you like to plug?
Well, since we had the lovely Penny Dreadful on, you should go to shillingsshockers.com and check out some of her, buy some DVDs and check out some of her YouTube clips.
I am actually going to do that today. I really do miss the old Creature Double features. I was lamenting that just a couple of weeks ago. Do you guys remember Captain Video?
Oh, yeah. What was the other guy in the red, white, and blue underwear?
That was Captain Video.
No, that was not.
Oh, Commander USA.
Commander USA.
Oh, I loved Commander USA. Oh, my gosh. Those were terrific. I'd like to plug our Twitter account real quick, and that's Outside the Long Box, at the Long Box, guys. We now have 24 followers. All right. We're chugging along there, guys. And all of our followers are real, and we appreciate every single one of them. So just by saying 24, don't think that we don't love each and every one of you guys. So that's my plug. And Mikey, what do you got?
Well, of course, I'd like to thank Kirby Crackle for providing our music. You should go to kirbycracklemusic.com to check them out, or you can buy their music on iTunes or Bandcamp. I'd also like to plug Philadelphia WizardCon, June 2nd to the 5th. We are going to be there, all four of us, plus my niece Jasmine. We are going to be doing, what are we going to be doing? What panel?
We're probably going to be doing horrible, 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 horrible stereotypes, because that's what we only have. There was only room for us to do one, and that's the one we did last, and I thought we had like a lot of fun. And the last time we were in Philadelphia, we didn't do that one. So I thought it would be better to switch it up and do that one.
We did that in Philadelphia last time. Andy was on the panel with us back then as our gay lesbian expert. But we are also going to be doing the horrible stereotype panel at Comic Palooza in Houston, Texas, on June 18th at 4 o'clock in room 20. So if you are in the Houston area and want to come by Comic Palooza and check out the Horrible Stereotypes panel, it's going to be me, and I am going to be joined by the comic book Femme Fatale and a couple other surprise guests.
You got Emily to come on down with you?
Yes, she's going to be coming down.
That's awesome. I love Emily. Emily always brings such a fresh and interesting perspective into it. It's terrific, and we might as well plug her podcast while we're at it then.
She's got a blog, which you can get to her blog on our website, OutsideTheLongBox.com. On the right-hand side, there's a list of a bunch of people's blogs who we really enjoy, including the comic book Femme Fatale, J.B. Gardner, and the Nola Nerd Couple.
We like all those guys. Terrific. Well, I think that's it for us here at Thinking Outside the Long Box.
I do have one more plug since today's topic was horror. I would like to promote the band Angry Johnny and the Killbillies, Western Mass band I love. Go to getangry.com to view Angry Johnny's creepy artwork or to enjoy their wonderful psychobilly music.
Actually, I really like Angry Johnny, too. Well, that's all the time we got from Thinking Outside the Long Box. And remember what we always say. What do we always say, Josh?
Don't diss what you hate. Promote what you love.
That's right, because there's too much hate out there, guys. Thanks a lot, and have a great week, guys.